dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. I have been privileged to know and work with our guest this hour for much of the past 30 years, I think, in one capacity or another, as he has brought to bear truly one of the most impressive intellects, particularly when it comes to the war of ideas piece of that war for the free world. I have known him through his service to our country in several different capacities, notably as director of the Voice of America. He also served as an advisor to our forces the interim government, let's put it that way, of Iraq after its liberation, and not least as a senior advisor in the office of the Secretary of Defense. Today he is a fellow with the Westminster Institute, one of my all-time favorite organizations in Washington, D.C., and he is also serving on the board of directors of that organization and the Middle East Media Research Institute. In other words, just a absolutely blue-chip resume, stem to stern. His name is Robert Riley. Robert, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. I couldn't be more pleased to have you with us and to be able to spend a full hour with you exploring some of the more interesting and more challenging aspects of the war for the free world.
Well,
glad to have you.
Frank, it's a delight to be with you, but you better tell your listeners to fasten their seatbelts.
I am indeed. Your forewarned is forearmed. Let's rock and roll. Bob, I want most especially to call people's attention to a marvelous talk that you gave at an event the Westminster Institute had on Capitol Hill recently. And it's coming out in a slightly further elaborated form as a white paper, I guess, of the Westminster Institute. It's talking about something that I think most of us really don't much think about, know about, or for that matter, probably care about, but need to. It's called information operations. Let's introduce that term and define it, if you will, and then we'll get into some of its implications for where we are at the moment in this war.
Well, I think, Frank, briefly enough, we can say information operations are telling our side in the current of war of ideas in which we are engaged in large parts of the world, particularly in the Middle East. And you are absolutely right by saying people don't know much about this. But I can guarantee you that on those occasions when I do speak to groups, they go into a state of shock when they learn what we're not doing and those things that we are doing that are not only ineffective but counterproductive. They simply assume that the United States is fighting our side in this war of ideas against people who deny the fundamental principles of our country. And
who, by the way, are under no illusions about the importance of information operations in furtherance of their cause.
Well, isn't that the exact point? Because as I mentioned briefly in the talk to which you were so kind to allude, the Bipartisan Policy Center's Homeland Security Project, chaired by the former 9/11 Commission chiefs, very bipartisan group, just came out last month and said, quote, even though core al-Qaeda may be in decline, al-Qaedism, the movement's ideology, continues to resonate and attract new adherents, unquote. And in fact, al-Qaeda is present in some 16 areas around the globe, twice that it was 5 years ago. And The Economist, at the end of September, stated that from Somalia to Syria, al-Qaeda franchises in jihadist fellow travelers now control more territory and can call on more fighters than at any time since Osama bin Laden created the organization 25 years ago. Now, you know, people, since, as you know, I've worked a lot in public diplomacy from the State Department, from the White House, from the Defense Department, and they try to come up with various metrics. You know, how do we know we're succeeding? And the usual answer are the polling operations. And since our public diplomacy at the Broadcasting Board of Governors has been reoriented to youth audiences, so they play large gobs of pop music, they'll say, look, this is a success because kids like listening to music. The real metrics are right there, right here, the ones I just referred to. We have a bigger problem today than we did 10 years ago. Now, how can that be if what we're doing is even marginally effective?
Yeah. Bob, hold the thought. Hold the thought, because that's a pregnant question, needless to say. But before we delve too deeply into the answer to it, let me just ask you to develop a little bit this term that I've not run across before, that the bipartisan center, as you mentioned, I guess is coined, al-Qaeda-ism. You've spent a lot of time studying the Muslim world, the Islamists among them most especially. In fact, you've written a marvelous book on the subject entitled The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. And I just wonder whether what we're dealing with here, Bob Riley, is something that's bigger than al-Qaeda, bigger than al-Qaedaism. But talk a little bit about kind of the underlying doctrine or ideology. I think it's best described in the term that they use, Sharia, and how it's imperative that we understand that if we're to do anything remotely productive about it.
Frank, I think that's an excellent point. What the Obama administration has tried to do is dumb down the problem and confine it to al-Qaeda simply. And because not only they, but the preceding Bush administration had success in degrading the leadership of al-Qaeda, that gives the Obama administration the claim that we've basically or nearly won, and allowed him to say, believe it or not, that this war was over. Well, it's obvious it's not.
Or at least needs to be over, I think is the way he put it.
Yeah, you know, he did that at my old National Defense University,
right,
where I used to teach. Every war must end, and so must this one. But it's only if you can address it successfully at the level of war of ideas, because that's the level at which it's taking place. And the violent manifestations are simply that. They're emanating from the success on their side of this war of ideas. Al-Qaeda, as you point out, is only one of the many manifestations of the underlying Islamist ideology. Muslims themselves use this term, Islamist, and they know what they mean. It's turning the Muslim religion into an ideology of supremacy and conquest, in the name of which violence in almost any form can be used in a justifiable way.
Jihad.
And, of course, it's beyond jihad, Frank. It's because even jihad, at least in the classical era of Islam, had some rule. This doesn't. And as you know as well, they've killed more, the Islamists have killed more Muslims than they have non-Muslims. That's because they don't have the capacity. They'd be happy to kill more of us.
Yeah. Well, we're going to develop this further in the course of this hour conversation with Dr. Bob Riley, the author of The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. And when we come back, Bob, I specifically want to ask you to tease out for us the role that the Muslim Brotherhood is playing in this well, jihad, I think, is one way of describing it, the holy war, including the practice that they call civilization jihad, and how that fits into this larger scheme that that very much includes, of course, a war of ideas component, influence operations, and the rest very much being performed and practiced and successfully so by our enemies. The man who knows a lot about this and who has done his level best to counter it, Robert Riley, will be with us more in the next few minutes right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined once again by Robert Riley, a man who has served in a number of important capacities in the United States government, really at the cutting edge of what in its day was our influence operations operation. It was very much the purpose of the Reagan administration, for example, in which he served, and to varying degrees subsequent administrations, to promote America and its ideas, its doctrine, if you will, its beliefs and values. And we're not doing very bloody much of that these days, that's for sure. Bob Riley, you were talking about the people who are using war of ideas techniques against us. And we wanted just to develop a little bit our understanding of a group that is very much in that fight, but not Al-Qaeda, namely the Muslim Brotherhood. Talk a little bit about who these cats are and why we mistake what they're about at our peril.
Absolutely, Frank. As you know, Al-Qaeda emanated from the Muslim Brotherhood, and almost every Islamist organization in the world today, including Hamas, was born out of the Muslim Brotherhood, which began more than 80 years ago in Egypt. And its primary goal is to reestablish the Muslim caliphate and to impose Sharia law on its subjects. They've never been shy about this. This has been its announced goal since Hassan al-Banna founded it. Now, there are forms of the Muslim Brotherhood which say we're going to take the peaceful path, and there are forms which say we'll take the violent path. In a way, that's irrelevant because the goal is the same. And the United States has foolishly, most particularly under President Obama, embraced the Muslim Brotherhood as a legitimate political actor in the Middle East.
Bob, talk a little bit about that peace, the failing to understand the nature of the enemy that is so evident in the Obama administration's dealings with the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, you know, you puzzle over this. As you know, members of that administration testified before Congress that the Muslim Brotherhood was a secular organization when their explicit goal is to impose Sharia rule in Islam and reestablish the caliphate. It's fantastical. And it's based upon this willful ignorance of the Muslim Brotherhood's principles that allowed President Obama in 2009 to go to Cairo in his address to the Muslim world and seat members of the Muslim Brotherhood in the first row. And since this group was still outlawed in Egypt, that meant President Mubarak couldn't attend or wouldn't attend. And now that the Egyptian military, responding to some 30 million people in the streets of Egypt, threw out President Morsi and the Brotherhood, which was attempting to consolidate a non-democratic totalitarian regime there.
A Sharia state.
And of course, with the ultimate objective of a Sharia state, we have curtailed some military aid to Egypt. Well, that's interesting. When they overthrew Mubarak, we didn't curtail aid to President Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood regime. We increased it.
Indeed.
And now we're sending this signal that even though the Egyptian military basically saved the Obama administration from its enormous stupidity in the Middle East, they won't accept success. They continue to undermine our interests in the area. And you see that not just in Egypt. It's see no evil in the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, the people of Egypt saw a problem, and we're denying the existence of that problem.
And they're horrified at our behavior in this regard. But Bob Riley, talk a little bit about this proposition. You use the term willful ignorance to describe, among others, the director of national intelligence, James Clapper, who made that notorious statement that we're dealing with a largely secular organization in the Muslim Brotherhood, and they've eschewed violence, and they have no overarching agenda, at least internationally, and so on. I mean, utter rubbish. But my question really is it just ignorance, or does this reflect, in your judgment, as somebody who knows something about influence operations and information operations, the success of the Muslim Brotherhood in penetrating getting inside the wire of our government, if you will, and subverting it from within as their doctrine calls for?
Well, I think there are two parts to an answer, Frank. One comes from the famous novelist Saul Bellow, who said a great deal of intelligence can be invested in ignorance when the need for illusion is deep. You can see this with the way the Iranians today are playing us, the United States. If they're telling us what we want to believe, they know what we want to believe, so that's what they tell us. Disposing us then to overlook the realities of their nuclear program and their oppression of the Iranian people. So part of it is the Saul Bellow line. The other part is that they're very good at their information operations, both overseas and here. The Muslim Brotherhood is extremely active in the United States through the organizations it has spawned, most especially the group known by its acronym CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, that fosters this false view of most particularly Islamism, which it promotes. And it behaves in a highly aggressive way toward any American who is willing in public to state the truth about both the Muslim Brotherhood and the line that CARE is pushing in the United States. And they're aggressive enough that they've obviously had some success in this area.
Well, and Let me just finish. We're going to have to pause here for just a moment. But Bob Riley, what you've just described really in terms of the modus operandi, if you will, of the Council on American-Islamic Relations is suppressing those who might raise awareness or raise an alarm even about their operations, about their agenda in America, which is, again, according to the Muslim Brotherhood's own mission statement, destroying Western civilization from within by their hands, meaning ours, and the hands of the believers, so that God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. This is a formula, in short, for subversion and you know, the ultimate triumph of this supremacist Sharia agenda and doctrine. And as you say, Bob Riley, the Council on American Islamic Relations is at the forefront of this kind of campaign. Bob, when we come back, I want to give you a chance to finish your thought here, but most especially I want to talk more about where the failing on our part, even to understand this enemy is at work, let alone the successes that it has had getting inside the wire of our government, as I say, and attacking other civil society institutions most especially, what it means in terms of the likelihood of an enemy information operation or influence operation prevailing to our great detriment, if not ultimately to our destruction. More on that with the author of The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis, and of a brand new white paper coming out this week from the Westminster Institute. He is Bob Riley, and more with him right after this.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Hefting with the Secure Freedom Minute. For decades, the Eastern Mediterranean nation of Turkey has been an important strategic ally of the United States. Situated at the juncture of Europe, Central Asia, and the Middle East, the Turks played a particularly critical role in defending the free world during the Cold War. 10 years ago, however, an Islamist named Recep Erdogan was elected prime minister and started what his friend President Obama would call a fundamental transformation of Turkey. Erdogan has mutated his country into one in which the repressive Islamic doctrine of Sharia has steadily and insidiously supplanted democratic freedom. Turkey's also ceased to be a reliable Western ally. Most recently, it helped the Iranian mullahs destroy an Israeli spy network providing vital intelligence on Iran's nuclear weapons program. With friends like Recep Erdogan, who needs enemies? This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back, joined for the third segment of a full hour, what a treat, with Dr. Robert Riley, a man who has been practicing information operations on behalf of America, what a concept, for decades, and done it with great skill. He is the author, most recently, of a book entitled The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. And Bob, we have been teasing a new product based on a marvelous speech I had the privilege of hearing you give to the Westminster Institute at a symposium on Capitol Hill recently that will be coming out this week as a white paper from the Institute. And I just want you to walk us through sort of the first principles that you laid out if you wish to wage and win a war in the kind of environment we're in today, the war I call the war for the free world. Talk about those first principles, if you will, and then let's visit on how we're doing.
Fine, Frank. I've distilled these down from years of experience, and they're very brief. The first one is, do not go into a war of ideas unless you understand the ideas you are at war with. And that we have been discussing, that we don't seem to understand the ideas we're at war with, or we simply are willfully ignorant of them. Second is, do not go into a war of ideas unless you have an idea. And that's not as simple as it sounds, because there has to be a broad consensus in our society as to those ideas that represent us in terms of the American principles. And thanks to multiculturalism, moral relativism, that has gotten very fuzzy and opaque. So that's a difficulty. Third, wars of ideas are conducted by people who do not think, are not influenced by ideas. They're influenced by those who do think. And when you have limited resources, you don't try to reach everyone. You try to reach the people who think. So that should help define your programming. The fourth one is this. When ideas are important enough to form the core of a culture or a civilization, it takes generations to transmit them in an effective way, and that you need institutions in order to do that. I remember meeting with the premier counterterrorism expert in India, said this to me. He said, in Kashmir, for a period of 20 years in the madrasas there, they inculcated the jihadist ideology in a cadre. He said, after 20 years, the war of ideas was already over there, and the acts of violence began. He said, now you Americans, you have your one-month plan, and you have your three-month plan, and the strategic thinkers amongst you may even have a year plan. But where's your 20-year plan, and where are your institutions that can sustain it over the span of a generation? We don't have those institutions today.
Let's take each of these in turn, Bob. As you say, we've been visiting a bit about the enemy very clearly having an idea in this war we're in. As I say, I think they call it Sharia. It's the idea of imposing that program on all of us. You've touched on a little bit the fact that we lack a coherent, broadly braced idea of what we stand for. And I couldn't agree with you more that this is a function in part of a multi-generational assault on our academic institutions, our media, our culture more generally, and our government, of course, by the left, not simply by the Islamists, but they're making common cause. The third piece of this, which I think is such an insight, and really all of these are just common sense when you think about them, but there's so little common sense these days that not enough of us are. But talk a little bit, Bob Riley, about what the failure to reach out. You mentioned this effort to use pop music to attract an audience, but the failure, who is it we're not reaching anymore as we use pop music as the kind of lowest common denominator appeal to the audiences of, say, the Voice of America at the moment?
Well, we're not reaching the people who think. I've got to be a little more specific, Frank. When I was director of Voice of America, our Arabic service, which was 12 hours of broadcasting a day, was eliminated and replaced by Radio Sawa, which was as much as 50 minutes in the hour pop music, a melange of Britney Spears and J-Lo, along with air pop music. Now, that I got to meet the dean of journalism in Jordan, and I asked him, what do you think of Radio Sawa? I hadn't said anything about Sawa. And he said, well, you know, in the cabs you can hear it because people love music. He said, it's fun, but it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant to any serious thinking or political developments in Jordan, or indeed anywhere else. We squandered the adult audience that we did have for a youth audience that is influenced by other things than the entertainment that we're providing in terms of the direction in their life. You can't divert people from the sources of meaning in their life, and we have therefore more or less abandoned those truths that we did represent. A few years back, I'll just tell you this little anecdote that may surprise you. I was giving a lecture on Islam to a group of Europeans, private meeting held in Slovenia, and they were mainly European economists. And when I was through, they were in a state of shock. And they said, this is worse than we thought. What should we do? And I said, the first thing you should do is regain your faith. Because if you haven't any, you don't have anything with which to fight this Islamist onslaught. And that, of course, is the disturbing part of this picture. And it relates to that point on we have to have an idea to fight an idea. You go to a place like Great Britain today, which I visit often, the Muslims in that country are only 3% of the population. They shouldn't be a problem. The fact that they are a problem is a reflection of the loss of faith in Great Britain, in their own religion, in their own institutions and ideals. That's the problem, not the Muslims. The Muslims shouldn't be a problem. They're only a problem because of the loss of faith in the West.
So they're filling, if I could put it in my words, a vacuum.
They're walking into a vacuum. That's perfect.
And the Brits, for example, have been sort of reflexively accommodating the ascendancy of these Islamists. And it's important, I guess, Bob, to make sure that, again, we're clear about our terms. We're not talking simply about Muslims. We're talking about Muslims who seek to impose this agenda, this political agenda, this Sharia program, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's more than a political agenda. It's a totalitarian agenda. It's an ideology every bit as much as communism was in other 20th century ideologies. It's not a political program. It is a ideology in the sense that they have found the means for imposing perfect justice on this earth. No longer left to God's judgment in the afterlife, in the transcendent. They have the means to do this here, just as the communists thought they had the means to transform man into the classless society. It's at that profound a level.
And I mention this in part, Bob, because a prime example of what you're getting at here is the fact that there are something on the order of 87 Sharia courts that now operate in Great Britain in parallel with the courts of, you know, common law of Britain, but very much using a different set of guidelines, perfect justice, if you will, according to God, but not according to the, you know, rights and privileges that the Brits have had under the, you know, the common law that's developed since the Magna Carta.
And you even see Anglican archbishops endorsing the practice of Sharia. I mean, what could be more intellectually and spiritually corrupt in doing that?
Not just that, but actually obscene, really, if you think about it. Bob Riley, we're going to have to pause for just a moment to take a break. But when we come back, I want to visit more about this acquiescence, the submission that we're engaged in. It's not just the Anglican bishops, unfortunately. It's an awful lot of others in this country as well as on the other side of the pond. More on that and much, much else to discuss with our friend Robert Riley, the author of The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Gaffney.
Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com. Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined once again for the concluding segment of a marvelous hour-long conversation with Robert Riley, one of the most thoughtful and energetic and, I think, formidable advocates of an American information operation and apparatus to help us wage the war of ideas effectively. He is a senior fellow for strategic communications at the American Foreign Policy Council. He also is on the board of directors of the Westminster Institute and the author of a book we've been discussing this hour, The Closing of the Muslim Mind, and a new white paper coming out about information operations, successes, and failures from the Westminster Institute. And Bob, one of the things that you touched on just before the break was the acquiescence is, I guess, one way of saying it, of Anglican bishops to the demands of Islamists in the United Kingdom. This is clearly not restricted to those folks, unfortunately. But talk a little bit about, if you would, the implications in Sharia cultures of people, adversaries, infidels, what have you, engaging in what is perceived by these Islamists and their followers as submissive behavior, whatever they dress it up as, politically correct, sensitivity, multicultural, and so on. It actually is submission. What does it translate into when the Islamists take stock of that?
Here's the point of a war of ideas. What you need to do in a war of ideas is establish and promote the moral legitimacy of your cause and undermine the moral legitimacy of your opponents. What has happened in the way in which you're describing it is we have conceded the moral legitimacy to our opponents. Bad move in a war of ideas.
Especially and a war of ideas with this kind of enemy who believes that it is God's will that they destroy you.
And as you well know, Frank, because you've spoken and written on this many, many times, we have allowed ourselves to be tied by a false notion of respect for religion and therefore do not speak and address the evil of this ideology which animates our opponents. We have given them what my dear friend and great American hero from the Pentagon, Bob Andrews, calls a theological safe haven. Far more dangerous than a physical safe haven is to concede to your enemy a theological safe haven. This is a form of theological and spiritual warfare. If our side has lost faith, we don't have the means with which to fight this war. And I'm sorry to say, one of the reasons we're not fighting it effectively is a manifestation of this problem.
And let me just go one step further, Bob. My reading of the doctrine of Sharia is that when the adherents to it perceive the infidel, or whatever you want to call them, engaging in this kind of behavior, this submissive behavior, they are obliged by God to redouble the effort, as the Quran says, to make the adversary feel subdued. So far from alleviating the danger, it only exacerbates it. And in fact,
it propels it into
the violent kind of jihad. Yeah, very much so.
You know, as we have known, Frank, and in fighting other forms of totalitarianism, weakness incites your enemy.
Yes. It is provocative, as your old boss, Donald Rumsfeld, used to say. Yeah, Bob Riley is our guest. You have served, as I've said, in senior capacities in the United States government, involved in information strategy. You were very much involved with trying to help the Iraqis in their position deal with the war of ideas. And not least, you led the preeminent institution of the United States government, arguably, for this kind of warfare, the Voice of America, for a time. If you were in a position to basically direct policy at this moment in time, Bob Riley, what would you have us do to wage this war effectively? You've made a couple of ideas and principles that we have to follow, but from a point of view of policy and institutions and infrastructure, what do we need?
We have no institutions from which to fight this war now. Broadcasting, including the Voice of America, was removed from the United States Information Agency, which used to be the agency from which the United States conducted our side in the war of ideas. That was eliminated in 1999, supposedly as a bonus, a peace dividend from having won the Cold War. So we disarmed ourselves. The Voice of America ended up under an independent broadcasting board of governors that is not in the chain of command of the executive branch, nor is it seen by that board as an instrument of national security. So we've lost the ability to direct the voice, and they've steadily degraded the Voice of America.
Yes.
Over the past 20 years and squandered this tremendous national security asset of the United States by eliminating services left and right and changing the programming. The first thing I would do, the first thing that needs to be done, and if it is not done, it just eliminates us as an effective player, is the reconstitution of something like the United States Information Agency that gives us an institution from which to conduct this fight, that gives us a place for the people who know how to conduct this kind of fight, gives us a budget in which to do it, and broadcasting means to do it. Once again, the United States should start printing and distributing books that influence ideas. It should reestablish its library. It should do all of the things that used to work, that carried us through our defeat of the two forms of totalitarianism we had to face in the 20th century. And now we're not doing any of that against this new threat.
That by some measures, at least, is even more dangerous than the previous two, because they believe it is God's will that they engage in this kind of totalitarian supremacism. And that makes them both much more difficult to dissuade and to defeat, especially if we don't understand, as you've said repeatedly, Bob Riley, what we're up against.
Well, Frank, a quick comment on that. The tremendous mystery to me is, since this became so evident to everyone on 9/11, why haven't we been helping those within the Muslim world whose success is essential to our own survival? I have been mystified by this, that we have not helped the people in the Muslim world who are attempting to fight this ideology themselves, just as we attempted during the Cold War to help those intellectuals, religious groups, and others behind the Iron Curtain who were trying to subvert that inhuman ideology.
We saw them as our natural allies. We saw success as our success, and in no small measure, Bob Riley, thanks to your good work under the Reagan administration, we actively sought to strengthen them, if only through moral sustenance, if not actual physical assistance. And none of
and
that seems to be happening
that.
Now.
No, it's not. In fact, Frank, this is a bipartisan failure. And I just want to give you a little taste from, believe it or not, Hillary Clinton. Yeah, when she was Secretary of State, she said, we invested so much money and effort over so many decades to get behind the Iron Curtain, to talk about what democracy was, to keep the flag of freedom unfurled in people's hearts, to get our messages in through every means, shortwave radio, smuggling Bibles. We did all kinds of things just to give people a sense they weren't alone and that maybe their ideas about the human spirit were not subversive. Well, we don't have those messages going out.
We don't.
Close quote.
We don't
How's
even.
How's that for an episode?
We don't even have them in our own hearts. It is indeed, and I hope it's an indictment that will be very much in evidence when if she decides she wants to return to public life. Bob Riley, I hope you will be returning to public life at some point. You are a national treasure, and your insights and expertise is really appreciated. I thank you for joining me for this full hour, and a very special program indeed, and so much food for thought about how to wage and win the war we must wage and win if we're to survive as a free people. Bob Riley, with the American Foreign Policy Council, also involved in several other marvelous organizations, including the Westminster Institute. Check out his new publication there, Information Operations, Successes and Failures. Riley, keep up the good work, my friend. Godspeed. I hope we'll talk with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.